Hello there, boys and girls, and welcome to another episode of Movie Madness, the episode that we promised last week, which is basically our inaugural first new movie episode. That's right, we're going to be looking at Oz the Great and Powerful. I'm your host, David Double D Dennis, and I'm joined this week with...
Andrew Roebuck.
And, unfortunately, Scott could not make the episode this week.
What are you talking about?
Because he's sick.
I'm pretty sure...
Wait, what do you mean?
I'm pretty sure Scott, version 9 is here, and he's just... You have to adjust your headphones, Dave. He's doing it at a frequency so high only dogs can hear him.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me adjust a little bit here. I'm gonna reset here my modulation device that we record with that I totally didn't just make up. Okay. All right. I readjusted it, and oh yeah, there's Scott. Hey, Scott. How's it going?
What's that? I'm very correct and a handsome man. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, he just said something very nice about... Oh, what? What? Oh, come on, don't say that about my mom. That's just rude. I'm gonna... You know, no, Scott. No, I'm kicking you off of this episode. Yeah, you are out. That's it, yeah. Sorry, people. Scott keeps making rude comments about my mom in his extremely high-pitched voice that only dogs can hear, and yeah, he's gonna have to sit this one out. But me and Andrew went and saw this movie, and we are definitely ready to talk about the wonder of the great and powerful Oz the Great and Powerful, which I think should have been called The Great and Powerful Oz. I don't know why they put the adjectives as the subtitle, but
yeah. And like in the movie, he's not even referred to as Oz the Great and Powerful. He always talks about himself as the Great and Powerful Oz, so yeah. It really doesn't fit.
Yeah, that's one of my my few complaints about this movie, actually. So we don't really have Scott to do Scott's plot this week. So Andrew, do you want to try and...
Oh,
do
no.
Some semblance of...
I will Scott. Pick
you
up...
You saw it more recently than me, so yes. That's why I threw it to you. I saw it on Tuesday, so it's a distant memory at this point.
Well, okay, I will try to honor Scott's memory. All right, so basically this film starts out exactly like the original Wizard of Oz starts out. Black and white, it's got the aspect ratio that was exactly used in the time, and it starts out with... James Franco playing Oz, the pretty much the con man magician who is working for this circus. He's doing a traveling circus and everything like that, and he's a bit of a womanizer.
Oh, just like in the original Wizard of Oz, it's in 3D. Remember that from the original?
Yeah, okay. That's
just thought
not
I'd
it.
Throw that out there.
Yeah, that's true. That's not in there, but, you know, it's Oz. Yeah. He's being a con man. He's being all, ooh, women, I love you. Here's this box. And I don't know where he gets all these boxes with these music in them, but with the amount of women this guy has shagged, I suspect he has quite a lot of them. So that is just one of the plot points that
he gets boxes with boxes.
Yeah, basically. And like yep. The original Wizard of Oz, I think some characters that appear in the film early in the black and white sequences kind of come back around and appear more once he finally gets to Oz. There's Zach Braff, who is his assistant in the black and white version, and then bam, he becomes a monkey bellhop in another one, and then Michelle Williams as Glenda the Good Witch kind of has an appearance there, and blah, 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 a woman who... Then there's a girl who can't walk, and then Oz is revealed to be a bit of a fraud, and then it all goes turn for the worse when he's trying to escape after shagging a strong man's girl, and he gets caught in a tornado, and pow, he's in Oz. But this is not the Oz we know. This Oz is in CG. Complete.
Whoa. CG and 3D.
Whoa. More like Oz
with
the
shit
CG.
Popping out at you from every angle.
Yeah, and basically he runs into Mila Kunis, who is playing Theodora. Is it Theodora the Good Witch? Which one is she? I think she's Theodora.
She's kind of... They never call her good or evil. She's kind of like... she is Theodora, but she's kind of just the neutral witch.
Oh, yeah, okay. Theodora the neutral witch. takes him to the Emerald City.
Or just the witch.
Yeah, okay, Theodora the witch.
No adjective. Yeah.
The adjectiveless witch takes him to Emerald City, where he is fulfilling the prophecy of the wizard, who is supposed to come and become the King of Oz and reunite all of its people. Her sister, who is played by Rachel Weisz, who is something... What is her name? Glenora?
Evanora.
Evanora.
She is evil, though.
Yeah, Evanora, the completely evil witch. And she takes him in, and she sets him on a quest to say, hey, I know you want all this gold that we have in the castle, but you gotta go kill this person first. And he's like, killing is wrong, but gold. So he goes and agrees to go try and kill the witch, who is the wicked witch at this point, as deterred by the film. But we later find out she's not a wicked witch at all. She's Glenda the good
Glinda.
Witch. Oh, all these names are so confusing. Glenora, Eleanor,
yeah,
blah, blah, blah.
I have the IMDb open. That's the only reason I know.
Yeah. And
people think I'm so smart up until they listen to this part of the podcast, and then they're like, oh, that's why.
Yeah, and basically on his way to meet the good witch, he ends up running into this really interesting Chinatown house, this Chinatown village that has been completely destroyed by the flying baboon monkeys from the original Wizard of Oz. And he finds one girl who has her legs broken and is like, oh, can you help me to walk? And then if you think back and you're like, hey, wait a minute. During the start of the movie, there was a girl he couldn't make walk who had her legs broken. Whoa, foreshadowing. And basically, he helps her up.
It's weird that I didn't actually even catch that. I'm just realizing that now. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that was interesting. And he accompanies the bellhop monkey and the China girl, and they try to catch the witch, who they think is evil, and then pow, she's good. And basically then blank Rachel Weisz's witch, because I'm just going to refer to them as their actresses now, ends up finding this.
Okay.
And then sends all of her evil flying monkeys after them, because they have found the secret that she is actually the evil witch. Which, I mean, the trademark of the evil witches is the baboons. Now, if all the baboons are staying at Emerald City, would it not look suspicious that the supposedly good witches have all the baboons living in their city? Anyways, that's just a minor point where I was like,
well, it's not
all
like
all the baboons
it's
are
not like Oz would have known that.
Yeah, but anyways, and then they get taken to basically the land of the Munchkins, because not really I don't know what is it called? Does it have a name in the movie in particular? Like, I know it's some kind of village that has these ragtag group of do-gooders, and it has a bunch of stuff it has a bunch of stuff that you wouldn't recognize from, like, there are these farmers, and there are these bearded guys who make things, and it's referenced that they made the farmers made the Scarecrow from the original movie, and these bearded guys end up making the Tin Man from the original movie. It's referenced like that. Like, they go, well, we can make a Tin Man, basically. But those guys aren't in the original movie. The only ones left are the Munchkins. So either the Munchkins end up going on a murderous rampage and killing all of them, or
genocide.
Yeah, basically. Or they just kind of die off, and which makes the Scarecrow and the Tin Man like the last remnants of a dead race, which is kind of a cool idea if you think about it that way. But from then on, they have to team together with Oz, who Glenda knows is a fraud, but she's like, hey, it's okay if you lie to people as long as they believe it. So, you know, he fools them all into thinking that he is a true wizard, and they go and they try and take back the Emerald City, and it ends up all working out for the good. And there's a bunch of stuff that is like, oh, I forget to mention Mila Kunis gets heartbroken,
and she turns green.
Yeah, she turns green, so she's a witch that you all remember, and she starts cackling very familiarly if you know the original movie, except she doesn't have the wart. She's missing the wart. I guess that just happens later on in the series. Yeah. But basically, she goes full evil, and it ends up being that Rachel Wise ends up basically being the Emperor from Star Wars, and she ends up being Darth
She's
Vader.
Darth Vader.
Yeah, and...
And it's at this point that we realize how awful of a choice Mila Kunis was for this character.
Yeah, that's
I felt,
true.
Anyways. At first, when she shows up and she's, like, neutral witch, it's like, okay, she's pretty decent. But then when they try to make her evil, it's like, oh, Mila Kunis cannot do evil, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and then while in the
Never
fight...
cast her as a villain ever again, please.
Yeah, exactly. Now, while they're setting up to do all of their eventual attack on Emerald City, Bruce Campbell ends up having his cameo appearance, which I only decided to mention it here because you may miss it if you do not know that it's going to be Bruce Campbell. And that's in the scene where they are trying to enter the gates of the city and the jive talking munchkin starts hitting the guard of the gate on top of the head a bunch of times. And that's Bruce Campbell. So you might miss that if you didn't know. They basically, that's a part where James Franco is basically sneaking in when meets up with the munchkin underground. So,
I didn't know that was him at first either.
Yeah. So that's interesting. And basically a bunch of crazy stuff happens. They end up winning, and then Glenda and Rachel Wise character ends up having the fight that the Emperor and Yoda have in Star Wars Revenge of the Sith, which it literally,
she even flips over a chair at one point.
Yes, and it literally ends with the two forces pushing their weapons together and then both blasting back afterwards, just like in Revenge of the Sith.
It's pretty much the same. I never even thought of it that way, but it's pretty much the same fight, except that now the green one, or no, sorry, this isn't with the green one. I was going to say, if it's with the green witch, now the green one's evil instead of good.
Yeah, so
but
anyways.
This is with Rachel Weisz, who turns into not really a green witch, but just like freaky, like character from Evil Dead witch.
Yeah, basically. She does not end up
in the
being
moment that
pretty.
In the moment that will traumatize all the children that go to see this movie.
Yeah, and basically, it all ends up happily ever after, although not really, because both the evil witches survive to wreak havoc on the land. And Oz is technically dead, so he can't even leave his chamber, basically. He is stuck in one room for the rest of his life in order to keep a secret. And at the end, he gives all of his trusty compatriots gifts in order to kind of to thank them for helping him on his journey. He gives this bearded black guy, who is the tinkerer who made all the cool stuff, he gives him his what are you calling, like, the pocket knife, basically, that
trusty
has a whole bunch of
doohickey.
Yeah, trusty doohickey, which is basically a pocket knife. And then he goes, he offers the monkey his friendship. What does he give the jive talking munchkin?
Like a weird, like, smile that he holds in front of his face.
Oh yeah, that was just weird.
And he's like, I don't want this. That was one of the funnier parts of the movie, I think.
Yeah, and then he runs out of things to give, so he gives the monkey friendship, and he gives the little girl a family, and then he gives Glenda a kiss, and it's a reference that, hey, they're in a relationship now, which is strange that she would move away after getting in a relationship with them, but who knows, maybe they have a big...
it's a long-distance relationship.
Yeah, maybe there's the Oz the Great Breakup that's going to be the sequel to this. We don't know. We'll have to see.
Or I was going to say there's an Oz version of Skype.
Yeah, basically.
That's what they use.
But it's supposed to be like magic. So. But James Franco just invents the internet while he's there. He's like, yeah, I'll just invent the internet.
He's like, ooh, it runs on magic.
So yes, that is basically...
Everything.
That is basically Robux plot, which will be... no doubt crapped upon by Scott when he comes back.
Yeah. Although, I know you wanted to say basically not really an apology, but I think you wanted to take back what you were going to say to Scott, or what you said to Scott in our most anticipated episode, because I think you like this movie more than you said you thought you would.
Yes, I have to admit that I was wrong. I was wrong when I kind of just wrote off this movie and kind of gave Scott a little heckling for that. It was actually a really fun, enjoyable movie, and I'm actually glad to admit I was wrong, because it was a cool idea, and I like The Wizard of Oz, so it's interesting to see how this whole universe kind of began, I guess. And it ended up delivering on what it promised. I would say it's the Oz, the pretty good, because they're pretty good with minor flaws, because there is a little bit of stuff that I didn't like, but for the most part, you were right to anticipate this, Scott. Two thumbs up to you over the internet, yeah. So you can't see.
Yeah, I thought it's a little bit weird, because this movie technically is not supposed to be a prequel to the original Wizard of Oz, because Disney doesn't own the rights to that. It's an MGM movie. But you could so tell it was. Like, they tried to throw in as many references as possible. There's a point even where the Munchkins try to sing, and James Franco's just like, no, stop, please stop singing. And just little stuff like that that's clearly a reference to the original. And even the way the movie ends, where the two evil witches are still alive, and the wizard basically has to hide. All of that kind of sets up for the next one. For the original one.
Also, a little interesting point. Basically, Oz creates the Cowardly Lion. There's a lion about to attack Zach Braff in the movie, and he gets magic used upon him, and it basically scares the lion away.
Oh yeah.
And the lion is
I never
in,
noticed that either.
The lion's in the same forest that they come across the Cowardly Lion with from in the original movie. So it makes sense that basically Oz scared the lion.
So that's why. So basically, it shows where the three, like the lion, the Tin Man, and the Scarecrow came from, because they have these scarecrows at one point that they used to distract the witch's army. And you mentioned that they make these guys say that they can make Tin Men, and he scares the lion at one point. That's pretty cool, actually. So there's actually a lot in this movie you could pick up on if you were to go see it two or three times, probably.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend doing that, because there are just little bits and pieces that you might miss on a first viewing.
Yeah. So why don't we do kind of a rundown of just maybe like the things that we liked and the things that we didn't like about this movie. So I'll say one of the things that for me would probably fall into both categories, actually, like I liked it in some parts and didn't like it in others, was Sam Raimi's directing. I feel like Sam Raimi has a really, really good sense of humor and a really good wit that comes out in a lot of scenes, and that really, really helped this movie. I think that was one of the main things that made it enjoyable, was just the moments where you can sit back and laugh. And there are quite a few scary parts, actually, for a PG movie. This is one of the freakier PG-rated movies that I've seen recently. And some of them, I think, were okay, but sometimes I feel like it went too far. Like I mentioned, it could be traumatic for little kids. I feel like he made it a little too scary and a little too Evil Dead. But, you know, his direction actually lent itself better to this kind of movie than I thought it would.
Right. Yeah, I enjoyed what he did with the film. I mean, my main complaints with the film is more regarding the beginning of the film, because I thought at first some of the CG was a little iffy, and I was thinking, they created this world in 39, I think? And they could do it practically then, and practical effects and makeup effects have grown so much over the years. Like, you'd think they'd be able to do a little bit more practical effects than they ended up doing.
Yeah, and just sort of pepper it with CG. Like, Zach Braff's, like, talking monkey character, I can understand why they would make him CG.
Right.
And the little porcelain doll, I could see how she could be CG. But there was a lot of stuff in there that it could have been done more practical. A lot of the backgrounds and sets especially. There's points where you can just tell. I don't know how you can tell, but you can just tell that they're on a blue screen. And for some reason, it's just really, it's a little bit off-putting. So I agree with you in that sense that they really could have used practical sets a lot more in this movie and just sort of augmented it with CG.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Because, I mean, I enjoyed it, and I think the best CG comes along with, as you mentioned, the characters they created that were uniquely fit to this movie. It was just weird seeing some of the lily fields and the fields with all of the sunflowers and stuff like that when you're going, well, I saw that in the original movie, and it was practical. So it's just weird that it's CG here. For the first, I would say about, half hour of the movie, I was going, why not just make it an animated movie? Because you haven't shown me anything in this movie yet that makes it worthy of having actors in it. And then near the end, when they finally got to the Munchkin Village and stuff like that, they ended up, elaborating a bit about that. Also, one thing I want to mention is in the original movie, in the Munchkin Land, there's a yellow brick road and there's a red brick road. In this one, you never saw anything of the red brick road, so that is still a mystery.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that had something to do with the rights dispute with MGM. Like, they didn't let Disney use all the elements. If you notice, the ruby slippers aren't in it as well. And that's because MGM owns the rights to the ruby slippers and wouldn't let Disney put it in the movie. So there's little things here and there that are missing from this. And I think some of the characters' names are different as well. But now, one thing I want to ask is, we talked a little bit about the casting with Mila Kunis. I like Mila Kunis. And obviously I find her attractive because, let's face it, she's pretty hot. But I feel like she was really just didn't really fit the role after she turns evil. Now, how do you feel about the other characters, though, like James Franco and Rachel Weisz and Zach Braff, etc.?
I really, really enjoyed Rachel Weisz's character, and I thought I actually, surprisingly, my two favorite characters in this movie were easily Zach Braff's character, which is rare for me to say because I'm not really a Zach Braff fan, and the little China doll girl, because I thought those two were really creative and really interesting characters that kind of had a cool arc to them. And I liked James Franco. I mean, he was fine in the role, but he at times was a little iffy. He didn't sell me it completely at the start of the movie, but near when it got to about the middle of the movie, I kind of started believing him more and was tolerating it a little more.
Okay. Yeah, I actually really liked James Franco in this movie, at least a lot more than I thought I would. I felt after I finished watching this movie, probably my first thought was, why couldn't he bring any of the charisma that he had in this film with this character to his performance at the Oscars a couple of years ago?
Yeah, but yeah, I can
we won't get too
that.
Far into that. But yeah, I really like Zach Braff in this movie. I'm kind of neutral on Zach Braff. I haven't really seen him in much. I never really watched Scrubs or anything like that, so he's just an actor. I don't like him. I don't hate him. I just don't care about him.
Yeah.
But he did a good job in this.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with it. Also, I just want to point this out that a Sam Raimi movie is coming out a few weeks before an Evil Dead remake, so we're going to have Bruce Campbell on the minds for some time now.
Yeah, that's true. Next month, our new movie that we're looking at is the Evil Dead remake, and we're also going to be doing a special where we look back on the three original Evil Dead films. So, yeah, lots of Bruce Campbell coming up and lots of Sam Raimi coming up to talk about.
He's
basically going to be our director of the month.
Do you like Sam Raimi taking this kind of a direction with the films he chooses? Because I liked his Spider-Man stuff, not really Spider-Man 3, but I kind of wish he kind of went back to more little films or little horror films or something like that. I wasn't as... I liked Oz the Great and Powerful, but I kind of wish he still kind of maintained the Drag Me to Hell type way he was going instead of doing like a big budget CGI movie. What is your opinion on that?
I feel like Raimi can kind of do both. He's okay at doing big budget movies, I find. Like, he's not terrible at it. I feel like in some ways he brings a bit too much of his own personal style sometimes. But I kind of like how if he keeps going back and forth between doing smaller budget movies and big Hollywood movies, I would be okay with that. Like, if he did, you know, a couple of one, a couple of the other here and there, I think that would be good for him as a director.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think this was much better than the Alice in Wonderland film that Tim Burton
definitely
did. So I would much rather see...
I feel, yeah, I'd definitely much, yeah. He had more respect for the characters, and he put a lot more heart into this. And there's the Alice in Wonderland film, to me, just felt very soulless. And I just felt... I can't even describe it. I just felt a weird emptiness walking out of that movie.
Yeah.
Like, what was the point of that film even existing? That was my thought when I left. I was like, that film did not need to even have been made.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, this film, I had some problems with it, but the one thing I didn't have a problem with was that it had heart. It felt like it was made by somebody who actually cared about the source material. So that's one of the big pluses for this film.
Yeah. And it's weird because there's moments in this movie that to me felt more like a Tim Burton movie than a Sam Raimi movie. And I was going to bring that up, and it's interesting that you mentioned Alice in Wonderland, because the scene where they introduced the China doll was, to me, just... Maybe it was because of Danny Elfman's score that was accompanying it, but to me it felt way more like a Tim Burton movie than a Sam Raimi movie, like the whole way that scene was directed.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Good Sam Raimi. I mean, no, sorry, good Tim Burton, not bad Tim Burton, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. Back when he still gave a shit.
Yeah, and no Johnny
Although
Depp.
I thought Frankenweenie was okay, but yeah, almost everything Tim Burton's made since like the late 90s just has been more or less forgettable, and it's kind of sad because it's like wasted potential.
Yeah. Oh, well. We don't even have to deal with him this year, do we? Tim Burton doesn't got to have anything coming out, I don't think.
Well, he did like two movies last year, and I think he produced two or three movies last year, so he was super busy. I think he deserves a break, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, anyways, we're here to talk about Sam Raimi. The Sam the Man
and this
Raimi.
New Oz film, yeah. So we talked a little bit about the cast. I actually like James Franco in this movie. I don't think I would have cast anyone else in his place, to be honest.
Well, it says on IMDb trivia that John C. Reilly was actually originally intended to play Oz the Great and Powerful, and I think that would have been pretty cool. But that's just me.
I could see that, actually. Yeah, that would, like, you don't see John C. Reilly being the leading man in a lot of movies. I think the problem, though, would be, if he was playing this character, he could do a really good sort of awkward kind of like reclusive Oz, as you sort of see him towards the end of the original movie. But I don't think he could nail Oz being like this kind of womanizer type of character.
Yeah, that's very
mostly
true.
Mostly because John C. Reilly is not the most attractive guy.
Yeah, he's actually
he has his charms.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that.
Especially if you've ever seen him as Dr. Steve Brule, one of the funniest characters in recent memory. If you haven't, go to YouTube and look up Dr. Steve Brule.
Okay.
It's hilarious.
I'll have to do
that.
Do
that after this episode. I'll send some links to you after we're done recording.
Okay.
But yeah, I think James Franco was able to nail pretty much all the different facets of this character, that he's a little bit nervous. He's slightly unsure. It's almost like he's a little bit unsure of himself, but he pretends like he's completely sure of himself. Like, he has this fake confidence to him. And I think that's what I liked about the character, and I almost related to him in a lot of ways. especially like recently, I've gotten a lot more comfortable around women. Like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I would not have been able to relate to this character at all. But recently, I'm a lot. I wouldn't call myself a womanizer, but I'm just more comfortable around women. And sometimes part of that is just having that confidence that it's not even like real. You almost have to fake it till you make it kind of thing. And you can see that he's doing that in some scenes, that he's totally unsure of himself. He's in a world that he doesn't even know anything about, but he's pretending like he knows everything and he's like this great wizard and all that. So he has this, like, a charming fakeness, if I could call it that.
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that. There was one small problem I had about, like, kind of the gender relations in this film. These are all witches who are super powerful, but a man has to come and set everything right. I don't know, it seemed a little
1950s. Yeah, and they all fall under his charms. Yeah, this movie's a little bit sexist, and that's probably my number one complaint about it. Actually, it's really sexist if you think about it. Basically, they're sitting around waiting for this man to fulfill their prophecy and come and sit on the throne. It's like, why can't one of the women sit on the throne? But anyways, and then he comes in, and he basically like romances all three of them. And then Mila Kunis, after he finds out that he's also interested in the other two witches, she's like, oh, he broke my heart, and it basically like ruins her life that this one man wasn't interested in her.
Yeah, she basically
revolves around being liked by a guy, apparently.
Yeah, she basically turns into Darth Vader here and is like, no.
But the lame Hayden Christensen version of Darth Vader, not cool 1970s Darth Vader.
Yeah, exactly.
The, like, you broke my heart, so I'm going to go evil.
Yeah, basically.
Anakin Skywalker. But, so yeah, that part of it is kind of, yeah. But that's less on Sam Raimi's end and more on, like, the people who actually wrote this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some parts where the witches get to, like, show their power and stuff, and it's kind of cool, and there's a few, you know, like, strong feminine moments, but overall, not really.
Yeah, to go way back to the beginning of this film, I thought this film had a really cool credit sequence. What did you think about that?
I went pee during part of it.
Oh.
So I missed about the first, like, 3 minutes. I only saw the very end of it. I just remember it was, like, I think it was in black and white, right? And it had lots of, like, colors and shapes all kind of moving around and stuff.
Yeah, basically. It was actually really cool. It's rare nowadays that I find a memorable credit sequence, especially opening a movie.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of films now, either A, they just sort of play the credits over what's happening in the film, and it just, like, they're just sort of on the bottom of the screen while stuff is happening, so you can't even really read them. Or if you do, you'll get distracted from what's happening. Or B, they go the way of Christopher Nolan's movies, where there is no credits at all, and it just has all the credits at the end of the movie. So there's not a lot of movies now where they actually take 2 or 3 minutes out of the beginning of the film just to show you all the opening credits. And if they do, it's usually kind of boring, so.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I just Sorry, continue?
I was just going to say, I do appreciate a film with a good opening credit sequence, especially because it's one of the things you take for granted, but it is one of the things that can really suck you into a movie, especially if there's awesome music playing over it and it's got cool visuals. It really gets you hyped about what you're about to watch if it's done right.
Yeah, definitely. Weirdly enough, apparently there was an announcement of a Oz the Great and Powerful 2 on IMDb. There's already an IMDb page for it. And it's apparently written by the same people that wrote the first movie. But I doubt it will get greenlit because this movie didn't make a lot of money, did it?
Actually, it performed better than they expected, I think. Because this is basically the first really big movie of 2013. So it's not like a big summer. Like, if it was released June, July, they would have expected it to do better, I think. But for the time that it's being released, I think it's doing actually pretty good.
Yeah, I guess
so. Like, it's number one at the box office right now, if I'm not mistaken. So I think it probably the studios would have wanted it to do better, but it's doing better than like, it's probably doing decent enough that they could greenlight a sequel for it.
All right, well,
I just don't know what they're going to do with the sequel. I thought it kind of led right into the original one.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it'll have more following Rachel Weisz's character, because we don't really see much of her in the original. And maybe it'll be about the formation of the Scarecrow and the Tin Man and all them. Or maybe it will just be a big breakup movie.
Oh, it's the big breakup, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That would be interesting. Maybe that'll be one of our new movies that we get to do on this podcast a couple of years from now. We'll see.
Hopefully.
So yeah, I guess closing thoughts about this film.
I really thought it was a pretty good movie. I mean, you got to get through the first about, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes is a bit of a slog the first time watching it. I'm sure it'll be better the second time you watch it, because you know what's coming. But when it starts off a little slow and not as good as I expected it to be right off the bat, but after you get through that and they finally get on their journey, it ends up being a really fun, really enjoyable film. Now, I would recommend this. I would recommend you go see this, because right now there's not too much else out at the box office, so it's one of the best options right now. I mean, I haven't seen the new G.I. Joe movie, but we all saw the last G.I. Joe.
Is that out now?
Yeah, apparently. Because I went and saw this movie, and all of a sudden I see, like, on the ticket prices, it's like, G.I. Joe, Retaliation. And I'm like, what? When did that come out?
Wow, it's sad, but I completely even forgot about that. But that's because it was supposed to come out last year. So stupid. But anyways, yeah, I would say definitely go check this one out. I wouldn't bring really little kids to watch it, because it is pretty freaky in some parts, and there's a lot of, like, jump scares, which is pretty standard for a Sam Raimi movie. But, you know, if people are going to see this not knowing it's a Sam Raimi movie, they might be a little bit shocked by how dark it is. But it's definitely a very fun, very enjoyable movie, despite some of the awkward casting and some of the like sexism that I complained about. I still did enjoy this movie very much, just in terms of a movie you could just sit back and sort of enjoy the adventure and really go on a ride with it. And it's actually been a long time since I've seen a movie that I can say that about, that it really just took me on an incredible journey. And, yeah, most of the movies recently haven't done that. Like, they try to teach some kind of a lesson or something, but they're not as much of an adventure as I would have liked them to be. And, this movie definitely fits that bill. It's not perfect. It's maybe like a 6 or a 7 out of 10 for me, but, I would give it a thumbs up. I would approve this movie for people to go see.
I completely agree.
Awesome. So we kind of discussed a little bit before we started the show on what we're going to do with our next few shows. Now, this show will be released. We're actually recording it the day before it's going to be released, so I got to hurry up and edit, because it's going to come out on the 24th. But the next week is going to be Easter, so we're not going to be releasing a show that week since it's Easter and we're going to take a break. But the show after that, we're actually going to stay in the wonderful world of Oz for one more episode, but not looking at the original 1930s classic. We're actually going to look at the 1980s classic, Return to Oz, which I say it's a classic for completely different reasons. I mentioned traumatizing children with this movie. If you really want to talk about traumatizing children, we're going to have a fun time with Return to Oz in a couple of weeks, so definitely stay tuned for that. I know that's a movie people like to talk about on lists of like freakiest kids movies and stuff like that, so it's going to be a blast, kids. Also, before I close, don't forget to send us your feedback, especially to tell us what you thought of Oz the Great and Powerful, because I am really curious what other listeners thought. There might have been people out there that just thought it sucked completely. And if you did, please tell us. Feedback at thisweekingeek.net, subject line Movie Madness, and we'll read your feedback over the air next week and discuss it. And hopefully Scott will be with us. And he'll have a new improved upgrade where he can actually speak. And it will be humans and not just dogs that can hear him.
Yes, and Continue.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, and he will be back to his mean Andrew-hating self and his politeness to Dave's mother.
Yes, very much so. And hopefully he'll have something to say about Andrew's plot replacing Scott's plot for an episode. But yeah, all stuff you get to look forward to in our next episode. But for now, thanks for listening, guys. For Movie Madness, we have been... That's your cue.
And Andrew Roebuck.
There you go. And David Double D Dennis. And stay tuned for another exciting episode coming up in a couple of weeks. Catch you later.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face.
And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat f***.
okay, I'm good, Geico.
Holy shit! Oh my gosh! Freak! Die! Holy crap! Whoa! Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear... somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content, as well subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by @replying to @thisweekingeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Prono Bozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember...
Lower your shields and surrender your listenership.